now, ladies and gentlemen, for your further listening pleasure.
Direct from the golf course and onto your radio, this is...
Hello, everybody.
The Fred and Jeff Show.
And good morning, everybody. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeff.
Hola, Tucson.
And we are here celebrating all the people, the places, the events, the history and culture to make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so dang wonderful.
That's exactly right, Fred.
And we have a superstar with us in the studio today. We're very excited to talk about a true Tucson legend, an icon.
That's right.
And but before that, we have a little housekeeping to do. We invite you to visit us at fredandjeff.com, where you can listen to old shows. You can check out all the things we're talking about because we hot link everything to that web page. Also, like us on Facebook, The Fred and Jeff Show, and tweet us on Twitter or whatever you do for that.
You don't really know
follow
how to tweet, do you?
Follow us on Twitter.
Right. Well, there's not much there to follow yet, but it's coming.
It is coming. And we also would invite people to one of the things on our website at fredandjeff.com is a upcoming events button, and there's so much stuff going on in Tucson.
Yes, there is.
Even, you know, when in the summer when people sort of stay indoors a lot, there's still stuff going on. I mean, the Padres games are still going on. And you know, I am just going to say they're doing unbelievably.
We're both minor league baseball guys.
Well, I love,
even though I'm a big Pirate guy, they're not minor league baseball, but I love baseball.
Yeah, baseball is just a great game, and it's wonderful. You know, it's a family event. You can go out there with the kids, with the wife, with the girlfriend, with the boyfriend. You know, the whole gang can go out and just have a wonderful time watching some really nice baseball.
I agree.
Also coming up is the Tucson, well, not coming up, it's going on right now. The Tucson Museum of Art has a Spirit of the West show, and they are telling stories of the American West with paintings. They have some saddles. They have some Native American art, photographs, and other objects. Go downtown and enjoy the Tucson Museum of Art. Science Sundays is also downtown at the Tucson, or Children's Museum Tucson. That's going on every Sunday through September, I believe. And one of my favorite things near the University of Arizona campus is 100 Years, 100 Quilts at the Tucson Historical Society, where they are showing and celebrating our state's centennial.
And don't forget, there's all kinds of things going on out there, not just the quilt show, but you can go to the Metropolitan Museum of Art. You can go to the Arizona... What did I say? The Metropolitan Museum of Art?
You mean the Tucson Museum of Art?
Tucson Museum of Art.
Or,
and
or about the
MoCA.
Yeah.
Which is?
Come on, Jeff.
I'm asking you, Fred. You're the art guy.
Come on, Jeff.
You're the dude.
It's Museum of Contemporary Art.
Thank you very much. There's just so many things to do out there in Tucson and Southern Arizona.
They have the San Javier tours going on all the time.
That's right. Kino Mission tours, I think, are there might be cranking up pretty quick, too. So there's tons of stuff going on, folks.
Yeah, the Tucson Botanical Gardens. And, Jeff.
Fred.
We need to get people geared up for a little event that's happening in August that you and I are participating in. The Sensational Settings Noche Caliente, which is a huge fundraiser benefiting St. Luke's Home. It's a hot night of cool fun, and we have been pegged as celebrity salsa makers.
Uh-huh.
So we have this contest going on right now, and we're inviting our listeners to send us your salsa recipe, your best salsa recipe. If we choose, and then whoever's recipe we choose, we're going to make and present at this Noche Caliente on August 17th down at the Stillwell House downtown. But there is benefits here. If we choose your salsa, you're going to get a prize package. And at the moment, the prize package has...
Wait. I'm sorry. If we choose to make your salsa...
If we choose to use the recipe...
Yeah, not that we know that salsa is going to win anything, but if we choose your salsa,
yeah,
you get all kinds of stuff. So go ahead, Fred. That was the disclaimer for the hour.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you, Lawyer Jeffrey. So at this moment, we have two passes to the Mount Lemmon Sky Center, thanks to our friend Adam Block up at the Sky Center. We have two tickets to the actual event, the Noche Caliente event, a dozen roses from our friends at Mayfield Florist, and other prizes to be announced.
We have four passes to a to a Padres game. Sorry.
Tucson Padres.
Tucson Padres game.
Make sure we're not sending people over to California.
And we have a $25 gift certificate to Honor Roll Sushi.
So we already gave that.
No, I have another one.
Oh, good.
So we have lots of stuff, folks. So sweet. Please submit your salsa entry to help Fred and I look better than we should, because if you don't, Fred's entry will be a tomato and some garlic and maybe some cilantro and chiltepín, and that's what our salsa will look like, and we'll win nothing.
It'll be in a bowl.
It will
be in a nice bowl.
Yeah. So, all right. So we got to take a quick break.
Send your recipe to fred@fredandjeff.com. Email it to us.
We got to take a quick break, pay some bills, and we'll be right back with our guest, Bob's Fob. So stick around.
Visit the Fred and Jeff Show online at fredandjeff.com.
Why are we proud to live in Tucson?
Because the trauma team at UMC delivers life-saving care.
Because the engineers at Solon make solar energy a reality.
While Davis-Monthan Air Force Base helps protect our freedoms.
Because researchers at Ventana Medical Systems lead the way in the nation's fight against cancer.
And because the Tucson Conquistadors raise millions of dollars to support kids' charities.
This is my Tucson, and together we thrive.
Burger.
A simple, well-made burger, cooked to your choice.
Why Monkey Burger?
We called it that because come see our art on the walls. It tells a story. Monkey Burger, where it's impossible to be a food snob, even if they do serve wine, beer, as well as Tucson's best burger. 514-9797.
Just drive right past Olive Garden on Broadway and Craycroft and park in front of Monkey Burger.
Casa de la Luz is Spanish for House of Light. That's what one needs when facing a terminal illness. A House of Light to provide comfort, support, and experienced hospice care during the end-of-life journey. The mission of Casa de la Luz is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Founded in 1998 by Lynette Jaramillo and Agnes Poor, Casa de la Luz Hospice has become a leading provider of superior hospice care throughout southern Arizona. Whether it is in the hospital, at home, an assisted center, or a nursing home, the caring staff at Casa de la Luz will reach far beyond the usual and customary hospice service. Every service provided is a reflection of our commitment to our community. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
It's never been easier to enjoy downtown, even during construction.
Downtown.
And with more than 15,000 parking spaces, it's a breeze to find a spot.
Downtown.
While you're downtown, you can enjoy everything from old-class cuisine to great casual dining. Have a night out on the town with the best nightlife around.
Shop at amazing stores with unique fashionable goods that you won't find anywhere else in town. Take in a show downtown.
Explore dozens of galleries.
Downtown.
And museums support your local
downtown.
Businesses see more at
downtowntucson.org. That's a better ad. People will love that. People will go, did you hear that dumb ad for downtown? Right, see if you can do something like that, because we'll run that and pay for it.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth, Tucson's News Talk FM.
And we're back. This is Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeff.
Hola, Tucson.
And we're sitting here celebrating all the great things about Tucson and Southern Arizona. We're asking you to visit us at www.fredandjeff.com. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
And our first guest today is a great one.
Yes, he is.
One of the things that Fred omitted was we talk about not only the people, places, culture,
history, and events.
It's the history of Tucson as well. And our guest today is none other than Robert Svob, who I'm going to give a little introduction to you, Bob, to our listeners. Robert S. Svob graduated with honors from Jerome, Arizona High School in 1937 after excelling in basketball and football, including All-State football honors. With a gridiron scholarship in hand, he came to the University of Arizona, where he played and lettered 4 years as halfback and fullback and received his B.A. in physical education and master's in administration. Bob joined the physical education staff at the U of A in 1942, then entered the Navy during World War II, served in the South Pacific, and then he joined the U of A faculty in 1946. And Bob was with the U of A. You retired from the U of A in what year, Bob?
I forget.
Yeah.
55 or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, well, you were appointed the Dean of Men in 1966.
Dean of Students, that's right.
And the Dean of Students in 72.
Yeah.
And, geez, you've been the chairman of the YMCA Ranch Camp. You're a charter member.
Right.
Of Big Brothers of Tucson.
That's correct.
You were Arizona Boars Ranch, a member of the Wildcat Club, charter member of the Arizona Alumni Endowment Club.
That's right. Yeah.
And you've been honored as a U of A Bobcat Hall of Fame and the Pima County Sports Hall of Fame. And you're an honorary life member of the YMCA and many, many, many other organizations. Bob Spob, welcome to the Fred and Jeff Show.
Thank you for asking me. I appreciate it very much.
Well, gosh, I don't know where to start. Jerome, Arizona in 1937. Tell me what was going on in Jerome in 1937.
Well, not very much. The mine was pretty much shut down, and the people were leaving. When I left, there must have been about 4,000 people, I guess. At one time, early on, and not before the turn of the century, there were over 20,000 people in Jerome.
Wow.
A lot of them living in tents, you know, and not houses, and working in the mines and stuff like that. But it finally got together, and we've developed a very nice little community. We had good schools, good teachers, and it was a very nice place to live.
And your dad was a miner.
My dad was a miner, yes, he was. He was a mine underground timberman in the underground, and of course he suffered from being underground so much. He died at age 55,
right?
And he had the black lung, so it was too good, too much for him. My mother lived to be 83.
You have what did you say? Six brothers and sisters?
I'm a family of nine children. I'm the youngest of nine, and six girls and three boys.
There you go, and you're the baby.
And
of the
I'm
family.
The only one left.
Yeah, the youngest. And so in 1937, when you graduated high school and you came to Tucson, what was Tucson like?
What was it like?
Yeah.
Well, Tucson was a big city to me in 1937, and we arrived, and our residence was at Arizona Hall, and we were on a football scholarship, and one of my best friends, Stubb Ashcraft, was my roommate in Arizona Hall, and we had a good time there and prospered well. We played football and, you know, all the things that go with it.
But you remember, back in 1937, the University of Arizona was not in the Pac-12.
No.
Do you remember the conference they were in?
It was more independent than anything, I think. We played people from El Paso, miners, and New Mexico, and schools like that, and it wasn't really a conference.
Did Tempe Normal have a football team?
Yeah. Tempe Normal at that time, right, yeah.
Were we kicking their butts back then, too?
ASU, yeah.
were you upper hand on ASU?
There were bitter rivals, of course, and we still carry that out, but it's a good rivalry, and it's well done. So we appreciate them having a good program, and we think we have a good program too. So
that's great.
Yeah.
So you left the U of A and joined.
Well, I want to talk about the football stuff because if I remember correctly, my U of A history, you were probably playing or at least interacting with Pop McHale.
I was hired by Pop McHale. In fact, he was almost like a father to me. He was a very nice gentleman, and he was very instrumental in my getting a job. He had to go before the region and beg for the job, and he hired me.
Were you a suspect individual at that point? Why would Bob McHale have to work on getting you a job? You're a pretty upstanding gentleman.
Well, I started looking around high schools when I graduated to get a job. And there were very few in between, and Mac McHale was saying, don't take anything until I see if I can get you on here at the university.
That's great.
So that's the way it went for a while. I mean, it wasn't until August that he finally got the president to okay the job for me. And I started at the university at $1,800 a year.
Wow. Was that a king's ransom back then?
Hmm?
Was that a lot of money back then?
You bet. That's the most I ever made.
Did you, and what was that position?
$18,000 a year. I'm sorry, $18,000 a year.
$18,000 a year. Yeah. And what were you doing at that point?
Just taught PE and trimming and all the things that go with physical education and worked refereeing basketball and football games in high school. So it was it's a busy time for me.
That's great.
Yeah.
And then World War II rolled around.
Well, the McHale was on the draft board, and he said, "Hey, Bob, the number is getting close." And so we hurried to try to get some contacts with the Navy, and we finally got a commission in the Navy. So I spent 2.5 years in the Navy in 1944 to 46. Yeah.
And you were in the South Pacific?
South Pacific, yeah.
What boat were
no
you
in? Action. We were lucky. No action. And by that time, a bomb dropped on Japan, and the war was practically over. So we started thinking about coming home. And then we took our ship back to Long Beach and refitted it in the holds for triple-decker bunks to go out to the Pacific and bring soldiers back home. And that lasted for a couple of months, and then I got out of the service and went home and renewed my work at the university.
Did you ever have any thought of staying someplace else while
no.
you were gone?
No.
I mean, you saw
no.
such an amazing
no.
part of the world.
No, Tucson was it, and the university was my home.
That's great.
It was, yeah.
And when you came back, what position did they have for you at that point? Were you doing the same thing?
Well, I was teaching in class, and then, of course, I was assistant athletic director for a few years, and Dick Clawson was the athletic director, and I was his assistant. And then when he moved on, and then, of course, the dean's job became open, and Swee Johnson got me moved over there as a dean of students. So that was my progress thing, and it worked out fine. So it was a nice switch, and I enjoyed it very much, working with young people.
And what year was that? Do you remember what you came back and you said 47?
I came back, let's see, it was in 41 to 44, and 44 to 46, the dates kind of, I lose track of the date.
Sure.
It's that area sometime.
Okay, so you're back at the U of A in 1947.
Yeah.
Things haven't changed much.
No.
Yeah.
It's gotten bigger. It's gotten bigger, but.
Sure.
Yeah.
We had Sky Leininger on the show, quite a number of months ago, and Sky said when he had come back from his service in the military that so many guys from Davis-Monthan stayed in Tucson.
Yeah, that's
they
right.
went to the U of A.
They trained in Tucson at different places, you know, Army or the Navy, and they liked it so much they came back. Yeah, they came back.
And so at one point you're serving in the military with these guys, and when they come back, now you're the dean of students, or you're teaching them, and you're teaching them PE. That must have been quite interesting.
Well, it was being a dean of students is quite an experience, and it's a challenging job because you have so many young people, and both men and women, who have problems. But we were mostly for the men, and it was day in and day out. People come in for jobs, looking for jobs, or looking for their trouble with their grades, and you're looking for people who help them with their studies and things like that. So it was a challenge.
No,
we had a good, very good staff that would handle all parts of the student background, yeah.
And where were all these kids coming from? Were most of them at that point from Tucson going to the U of A?
Well, most of the students were from Arizona, but a good number from out of state. You know, California, a lot of from the Midwest. And it was nice to interact with those young people from different places, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, now Jeff belonged to a fraternity. I did not. But back, it seems to me back in the 40s, 50s, you know, 60s, that the fraternity system was a little bit challenging.
Rambunctious?
Rambunctious would be a good
word. Well, there was a lot of activity, yeah. A lot of campus people coming on campus who aren't students and trying to convince people about their lifestyle.
Which didn't go over very well.
So okay, we're talking about maybe the 60s when people would have sit-ins. And
that's right. That's
so,
right.
I mean, I imagine there are a lot of fun.
Oh, they used to have build bonfires on the campus and throw up tents. And Sweet Johnson was my boss. And he'd call me on the telephone, probably 10, 11 o'clock at night. I'd call my crew all on a telephone circuit. Come on down to the campus. We got something going.
And there's a big bonfire happening.
Well, big bonfires and all smoking marijuana. And then, of course, the panty raids in the dormitories. You know,
oh,
things
I
like
them.
That.
I think Jeff was a chief panty raider.
Oh, if that were only true.
Great experience, yeah.
So what kind of stuff really stands out in your mind? I mean, you know, people obviously, it's a institution of higher learning. People are there to get a degree and better themselves. But campus life must have just been crazy and fun.
Well, every student got a mind of his own, of course, and they come to the university with big ideas and great expectations. And some of those, they get those, they fulfill their desires and their hopes. A lot of them don't. And then that's when you have some problems, you know, when they don't match up to what their expectations are. And then the hardest thing is when a student is killed on the campus or he kills an automobile accident and you have to call the patient, the parents of the young boy or young girl, it's a very difficult situation and to make that contact. So,
you've kind of seen
world,
it all.
The work was exciting, informative, educational, and it just you like to see the young people grow up to be somebody.
Well, speaking of that, I mean, who grew up to be somebody that we would all know? I mean, we some of the things we like to do here on the show is, you know, get the dirt on some of our historical characters in the old Pueblo. So anybody that comes to mind while you were there that's...
Well, we've had some characters on the campus. I'm telling you,
we've
had
characters. We want to hear some stories.
Oh, we had one time where one of the students was Arizona Hall. We got a call. There's a student on the lawn with no clothes on. He's on his hands and knees howling to the moon.
And what year was this, do you think? Because now that happens every Friday night, right?
Well, I don't know, but that was a new experience. So we had to get him back in there. And, you know, he probably had too much to drink and, you know, all stuff. And we took care of him. But some of them need some psychiatric help, and we try to do that for them. And some of them medical help, whatever right. It might be. We try to help students as much as we can.
Right.
A great experience. It really was.
Well, I'm thinking maybe, you know, Joel Valdez was a grad of the U of A, I believe. Were you around when he was causing trouble?
Joel Valdez.
The what? Remember, our former city manager.
Joel Valdez. You remember Joel Valdez?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So was he pretty straight-up guy, or did he cause a lot of trouble
yeah,
on
was.
Campus?
Fine. Yeah.
He was a good guy. See, Fred, you're not going to get anything today. Bob saw you coming, Fred.
Yes, he did.
So,
yes, he did.
All right. Well, folks, we are pretty close to the bottom of the hour here. We've got to take a break for the news. We've got a lot of questions, a lot of fun stuff to talk to you about, Bob, in the second part of the show. So,
and just a little bit of house cleaning just to remind folks, because I don't think we did at the beginning of the show, is at some point in the discussion today,
oh, yes,
there's going to be some information coming up that might be critical.
Valuable.
If you want to win a dozen roses from the Coleman family, and Meafield Floor. So keep your ears open. Something that we discover today will become a trivia question for a dozen roses.
Right. So stick around, folks, here on the Fred and Jeff Show while we take our break. We'll be back in not too long with our guest, Bob's Fob. So we'll see you in a minute.
Muslim Brotherhood will be next president of Egypt. Election officials have declared Mohamed Morsi the winner of last weekend's presidential election. He's U.S. educated, speaks English, but ABC News global affairs correspondent Christiane Amanpour says many fear he'll bring radical Islam to the office.
Many in the business community are concerned, and so, of course, are the minorities here, the Christian minority, which makes up about 10% of the country. Now, the Muslim Brotherhood has tried to allay those fears and saying that it is not just an Islamic democracy, but it will be a democracy that respects the rights of all Egyptians.
In this country, forecasters think Tropical Storm Debby, now churning up the eastern Gulf of Mexico, might grow into a Category 1 hurricane and maybe take a swipe at southern Louisiana around midweek. Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal declared a state of emergency. 11,000 people, a lot of them tourists, have been ordered to evacuate from in and around Manitou Springs, Colorado, because of a wildfire. Richard Cantu, ABC News.
I'm KGUN 9 News Side meteorologist Aaron Brackett. The thunderstorm chances continue, and boy, do we sure need that rain. As we go into the second half of today, we'll see those skies become partly cloudy, and the thunderstorm chances largely south of Tucson, although some could make it into the area. High temperature 103. For tonight, middle 70s for lows. We continue those thunderstorm chances as we start out the work week tomorrow. For 104.1 The Truth, Tucson's News Talk FM, I'm meteorologist Aaron Brackett.
I'm Jim Ronstadt. Over 100 years ago, my grandfather established Ronstadt Hardware in the heart of the Old Pueblo. The Ronstadts were a pioneer family during the growth of a fledgling city, and his store was founded on hard work, craftsmanship, and good service.
This is Jeff Ronstadt, and I am proud to carry on the family tradition with my dad at Ronstadt Insurance. In these trying economic times, you may have many questions about your health care and what's on the horizon. You may be asking questions like, how do I enroll in a Medicare plan and how much will it cost? Are my prescription drugs covered? And what will my out-of-pocket cost be?
If you are confused about Medicare, call us at 721-4848 and we will help you make a confident decision about your Medicare benefits. We are insurance agents licensed by the state of Arizona and we would be honored to assist you.
That's Ronstadt Insurance. Call us at 721-4848. We are pioneers in good service.
Are you planning a special event or celebration? Call Arizona Party Rental, the number one party rental company in southern Arizona.
Dave Fitzsimmons, cartoonist here. I figured since you can buy politicians so easily these days, why not rent an entire party? So I contacted Arizona Party Rental, and they said, that's not what we do. Well, guess what I found out? I found out they rent everything you need to throw a party. You know, I'm the kind of guy who likes getting married so often, it's good to know. Planning a party or a special event? Check him out at ArizonaPartyRental.net. Now, every time I get married, I call on Arizona Party Rental. If you're like me and you say I do more often than Larry King, call on Arizona Party Rental. And unlike Uncle Sam, they understand what a tight budget means.
Thanks a lot, David. Hi, this is Ken Flower of Arizona Party Rental. Do what Fitzsimmons does. Draw your own conclusions. Visit Arizona Party Rental today on Speedway and check us out on Facebook.
At Barker Morrissey Contracting, our goal is to develop lasting relationships with each one of our clients. We measure our success on achieving that in the end. We offer the best possible combination of experience, integrity, and commitment available in Arizona. The foundation of our organization is a commitment to meet our clients' needs from pre-construction services through project build and move-in. We have experienced, cohesive project managers who thoroughly analyze each project prior to construction. We do this to provide value engineering at the front end of the project while reducing time-consuming change orders during construction. We are confident that our collaboration with you will result in a successful project that'll exceed your expectations. Barker Morrissey Contracting. Straightforward, honest, and reliable. Call us at 323-3831 to set up an appointment. That's 323-3831.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth, Tucson's News Talk FM.
And welcome back, Tucson. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeffrey.
Hola, Tucson.
And Jeff, you just celebrated a birthday.
I did. I just turned 39.
You're turning into an old man.
Yeah, 39. Do you believe that, Fred?
See, one of the reasons I shaved my head is you can't see the gray hair, but yours are like sprouting in.
Do
like...
I need a haircut or what? You know, one of the great things about me is that I got a lot of hair. One of the downsides about me is it's all turning gray. Premature gray.
Maybe premature. Well, this is Fred and Jeff Show, and we are celebrating the people, the places, the history, the culture, and events that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so wonderful. And I got to tell you, we've been having Chamber of Commerce days, and it's just beautiful in Tucson.
Yeah, if you're if you're an iguana, or if you're like a, you know, some sort of horned toad that needs to lay on a rock and roast, it's hot.
I love the heat. It's hot. Yeah, it's hot, baby.
It's hot. But it's dry. It's a dry heat.
It is dry heat. But we're sitting here in the cool station at 104.1, and with us is Bob Slav. Former U of A icon. I shouldn't say former. He is still a U of A icon.
Former U of A halfback.
Former halfback.
Dean of students.
All sorts of fun stuff
all
going on with U of A.
Guy, yeah.
But we're talking on the other side of the hour, about your history in Jerome. And a lot of folks are very intrigued by the rural areas, the old mining communities. Tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up in one of Arizona's, mining towns.
Jerome, of course, was a copper mining town, basically. And early on, before I was born, there were over 25,000 people in Jerome working in the mines, underground. And it went on. They went on for years and years and years. And
What did they do with all those homes? With 25,000 people, what do you do with all those people?
Well, a lot of those people lived in tents. And didn't have homes of their own, and they were just workers, and they wear a pair of clothing, probably warmed a bed, and didn't have much to go on with their life, but they had a hard job in the mine underground. And then, of course, they shifted to the pit. They opened up a big pit for copper, and a lot of people worked in the pit, and they had big trucks would haul the stuff to the smelter down in Clarkdale, 5 miles away. And it was a good production. And
was that one of the reasons why the town went from 25,000 people to 4,000 people?
Yeah,
was because they opened
that
pit. That's
the day. And then of course when the mine closed, run down, no more mining, and the pit closed down, and then the people began to go someplace else.
If I sort of followed the work,
and they had to find work somewhere else. So, yeah. So
as a young man, as a young football star in Jerome, what was life like for you?
Well, it was fun to play football and basketball in high school, and you got to travel to Flagstaff and Winslow and places like that. And Waldo Dykus was my coach, and he was a University of Arizona graduate. He played football and basketball at the university, and he would drive his car, and we would load up with two or three cars and take our trips to different places, Clarkdale, Flagstaff, Winslow, and we even played once on the Indian reservation on a dirt floor in basketball.
No kidding.
Dirt floor. And we played a basketball game that way. So, but it was fun, exciting. You met different kinds of people, and it was an educational experience. And
now,
then, of course, while I was getting ready to graduate from the university, from high school, I got a scholarship offer by letter. Nobody came to see me. I made All-State football, and of course that was in the paper, and I got a letter from written by Bumps Tribolet. He was the manager of student affairs, and I got a letter asking me to accept a scholarship in football.
So well, did you and I just did a quick question because I want to hear the rest of your story, but when you agreed to come to the U of A, did you ever have any idea that you'd
been
to, ever...
I had been to UA. I'd come down for basketball tournaments.
Okay, so you knew all about the UA.
Oh, yeah. We had been to Tucson before, and we won the Northern Arizona Basketball Championship. Then we came down to play statewide in Bear Down Gym. And we played basketball on the cross courts.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So did you ever think that you weren't going to be a minor? Did you think that when you grew up you were going to go back to
Jerome?
That
was the first thing that left my mind, to be a miner. That was out of weight on my mind. I said, that was not for me. And that's why I went to university.
So you knew.
I saw what my dad went through, and all of my friends who went through the mine worked underground, and they died at an early age. My dad died at 56.
Did any of your brothers work in the mines?
Yeah.
Did any of your brothers?
So I told myself, I'm not going to do that. So I was lucky to get a scholarship to university, which was fine. They paid for my room and paid for my registration, and I got a job working in the dining hall, cleaning glasses and all that kind of stuff, and managed to survive. So then later on, I got a job down Howard and Stoff, down Main Street at Tucson.
Howard and Stoff?
Yeah, Howard and Stoff. Yeah, store. It was a business store. They sold business equipment, desks and chairs. They also had a sporting goods department. And I worked in the back store, back at the store, opening boxes and all that kind of stuff. So, in fact, they let me have a truck to go home. My wife was expecting her child, first child. So Fred Stahl says, we'll take the truck home with you, and if you have to go to the hospital, take her on the truck. Well, about that time, in the middle of the night, she said, we've got to go to the hospital. And St. Mary's was the only hospital in Tucson. And I got lost along the way. I finally found it.
Oh, no.
Finally found it. And I got in there, and I said, the nun said, why are you here? Well, my wife's going to have a baby. She said, sit down. So we sat down and waited, and she said, we want the money. So I had to write a check for $40.
$40?
$40 for the baby, yeah.
And were you still...
But the doctor came in. I think he came in after a nurse had been up there. I think the first child was delivered by a nurse, but I'm not sure. Never could do that, but that
and
was
you were
first.
Still a you were still a student when you had your first child.
Oh, first child. Yeah.
Film
school.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
So you were not only a student athlete, but you're also a dad, a husband, and a father.
A student dad.
I was one of the few. And, yeah, then another, you know, these stories don't probably connect to each other, but I went in the fall of my first year, 1937. My dad was very sick. And we got a call from them that he had passed away in November. So we took a bus home and got the funeral service and all that. And then we had bought a car the year before that. My dad bought a car. We took a trip to the Grand Canyon to see that and came back. And then I asked my mother, I said, you know, I'd like to take the car back to the university when I go back home. I thought that'd be pretty nice, you know, go back, bring a car. And I kept begging her, and finally she said, okay. Well, you know, Jerome's on a hill. My house was down here. And I walked out the door, and she was there with her hands folded like she always did like this, and watched me go up the hill where the car was parked up on the other street. And halfway up, she says, Bobby, come back. And I went back. She says, you can't have the car. And that was the best decision that I ever made, that she ever made for me. Because if I'd taken that car to university, that'd probably been the only car on campus by a student. We had a student. Everybody'd be wanting me to go drive him someplace. And it worked out much better for me not to have a car. So I just did my stuff like I was supposed to do.
Now,
so.
Bob, I'm standing here in awe of you. And I've known you for years. You know, we've been on the Sportsman's Fund together for quite a long time. But it's just dawned on me that you were not only a student athlete, you were the starting halfback for the U of A football team. You were getting an education. You were a father. You were a husband. You worked. And you were a member of a fraternity. How did you get all that stuff done in one day?
It was hard. My wife was very good. She was very patient and very understanding. She was a wonderful woman.
I mean, I don't think most
I had to officiate ball games to make extra money.
And you worked multiple jobs.
I worked football and basketball. And I worked track, too. You know, starter and track and things like that. So I worked everything.
So that really laid the groundwork for all of the philanthropic work you've done in this community.
Exactly, right.
For a long time. Yeah. I mean, if you had the opportunity right now to talk to kids going to the U of A or graduating from high school and considering what they're going to do for the rest of their life, most kids today don't do a tenth of what you did in the 30s and 40s.
They won't pay much attention to you.
Yeah, but what, if you could give them one piece of advice, what would it be?
Study hard, do your work, be on time to what you're supposed to do. And that's it. And if you have to work, get a good job, get a job and work, and help pay for your expenses for your school. That's what I did. And it worked out for me. But it wasn't easy.
Sure. What's good is never easy.
No.
And I think getting back to your point about your mom saying, no, you can't have the car. I mean, that was...
the best decision my mother ever made for me. Because if I'd taken that car to university, I would have been the driver for every student in the dorm.
Well, you would have never
wanted to go.
Yeah, you would have never...
I would have flunked out of there quick.
Yeah. I mean, so we have to take a quick break. Folks, we'll be right back with Bob's Fob. So please stick around.
Visit the Fred and Jeff Show online at fredandjeff.com.
Shelby, how does Five Star give back to its customers?
Existing monthly pest control customers who refer a friend to us receive a discount on their next service.
How about your current termite treatment customers?
When a customer's home is treated for termites, they refer a friend who has their home treated, they will receive an additional year of service on their termite contract.
Wow, that could add up to over $1,000 in savings.
Yes, it can. Log on to our website for details on our customer rewards program.
Five Star, the natural choice. 886-0045. FiveStarTermite.com.
When Jeff and I are looking for a good cigar, we head over to Anthony Cigar Emporium.
That's right, Fred. They have a great selection, knowledgeable staff, a comfortable environment. It's the perfect place to buy a cigar for any time.
Three convenient locations, one at Oracle and McGee, one at Crossroads Festival at Swan and Grant, and their new location at Williams Center at Craycroft and Broadway.
Come on over to Anthony Cigar Emporium, get your cigar, and you might even run into Fred and I, and you can tell us why you love Tucson.
Women Investing, an award-winning comprehensive financial services firm, offers customized programs designed to help grow and conserve your wealth. We encourage you to explore our website at powerwomeninvesting.com and learn more about the services we provide. If you would like to make an appointment, call us at 571-9053. That's 571-9053.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth, Tucson's News Talk FM.
And we are back. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother Jeff.
Hola, Tucson.
And we're celebrating all the people, the places, the events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona just so dang wonderful.
That is exactly right, Fred.
And we want you to visit us at fredandjeff.com. Go to Facebook and like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter. And if you pay attention, this is the segment when we start giving away the roses.
Right.
So with us in studio is Bob's Fav. He is a Tucson icon, a sports icon, a U of A icon.
Member of the Pima County Sports Hall of Fame.
Sports Hall of Fame.
Bob, you've had a lot of people over the years say thank you.
Well, that was a nice thing about Dean of Students. People coming back and talking to them. Talking to their parents and working with them on their problems and helping them out. It was great for me and very learning and very a good thing for the achievement between parents and students and for our office. And I had a good staff, too. And they worked very, very hard to take care of student problems and point them in the right direction and give them tips of how to do things and certain places and certain times. It was just great to have that kind of a staff. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, you know, one of the things, and you're also a player, you played football for the University of Arizona, and one of the things I was interested in is knowing what kind of school spirit existed back.
School spirit was pretty good at that time. Of course, it was smaller, and the students were just as excited about football and basketball as they are now.
Do they wear red and they have the Zona Zoo? And
no, there's no Zona Zoo, you nerd. But Wilbur and Wilmer were around back then.
Oh, well, we still have them, you know, sure, yeah.
And what was the football? Because you just told me something during our break, that you played football on the exact same grass that we play football today.
No, that's right.
There were just wooden bleachers, not...
Oh, on the east side, wooden bleachers, that's right, yeah. And the south end hadn't been closed in. And now it's got a stuff all the way around.
It's
with
a bowl,
the north
right?
end development coming on now, it's going to be a different stadium completely.
Oh, they have
the grass
boxes.
Still the same.
Yeah.
So. And the practice field was right to the north of the main field. Yeah.
That's amazing. So you still keep your hand in U of A athletics?
Oh, well, I remember my first day for practice Are we on?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
We are.
The first day for practice, and Limey Gibbings was in charge of the equipment room, and he gave me a pair of shoes that were must have been worn 14 years ago. And after about the first practice, I came in and I said, Limey, these shoes are not very good. They just hurt my feet. Oh, okay, I'll give you another pair. And he gave me a pair, well, just slightly a little better than the other ones. And that was the way we got run down equipment for shoes. Not brand new stuff.
Right, it's very different today.
That's right, very different.
Very different today.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. But you're still a big supporter. You're still a big
booster.
Oh,
you bet.
Yeah, you're going to the U of A football games. How do you think we're going to do this year?
Well, I always enter the season with my fingers crossed.
Well, we have a new coach.
You know, it's a tough business. Football is getting so competitive. All the different schools are, you know, everybody's doing better. And recruitment is one of the hardest things to do.
I have a question for you. In 1937, when you were a freshman, did you start at fullback? Were you a starter your freshman year?
Yeah.
How tall were you?
5'8".
And how much did you weigh?
165 pounds.
5'8", 165 pounds.
Yeah, I was actually going to make a comment about that because, you know, today you have to be at least 6 foot to get on that field.
I mean, the kids today are monstrous compared to...
Oh, you know, I walked down at halftime. I watched the game at halftime, you know, and watched by the... You look up at those guys walking across it. They're way up here. And they're bulky all over the place. You
know? It's amazing. It's just amazing.
Here I was, 165 pounds, and 5'8", maybe 9". Of course, I shrunk a little bit too in my older years.
Right. We do.
Yeah, you do. That's right. So, but it was different.
So different. Used equipment, and was it still red and blue back then?
Oh, yeah.
Cardinal and Navy?
Yeah. It was years before, it was sage green and silver, but... That was in the early days.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. So, in the last part of the show that we have left, I want to talk about your philanthropic endeavors in Tucson. Because being a dean of students is a tough job. You're dealing with a lot of kids and the issues that they have as they're going through the university experience. But it's also very fulfilling because when you're able to help these kids navigate through and be successful in their life... Yeah. That's got to be very rewarding. But at the same time, you've had a huge impact in Southern Arizona on children. You know, kids with the YMCA, the Boys and Girls Club, Big Brothers and Big Sisters. Tell me the genesis of that. When did you start getting involved with those organizations?
Well, it was a tremendous experience. But you find you have to put yourself, your own self, in that position, that student's position, in his life. What's his life like? Compared to what you were accustomed to. And you can't make judgments about my life being better than his life. He's got a life of his own. And he's got to work on that. And that's what you have to help him do that. So that's basically what we did.
Regardless of age.
That's right.
Whether he's an 8-year-old third grader
whatever.
Or an 18-year-old senior in college.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what brought you to the YMCA?
I was interested in the YMCA, and the director came up to me once and said, why don't you come on down and be on the staff or on the board of directors of YMCA? Oh, sure, I'll do that. So we got down. Our main object was to help students, young people, go to camp, have fun, live something about your life different than what you're accustomed to. And that was what started.
That's great. And the Big Brothers Big Sisters, that mentoring program, same philosophy.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, you've probably impacted thousands and thousands of kids in your life.
Well, I suppose that's true because I was I'm in contact with young people all my life, and always thinking, what's good for the other guy. And that was my philosophy.
Could you see yourself doing anything else in your life?
No.
That's amazing.
I worked at jobs, you know, to help pay expenses, different jobs. I worked at Howard and Stauff downtown when they had this store down on the main on Main Street.
Right.
And I worked in the back in the end, packing boxes and stuff like that. And I think I told you, they let me drive their truck home because my wife was expecting
you're going to have
a baby. And then I got lost on the way to the hospital.
That's a classic story. You know, that might have to be the trivia question. What hospital was Bob taking his wife to have their first baby?
And that he got lost to.
And that he got lost to.
That's the only one. It was St. Joseph Hospital.
St. Mary's.
Yeah.
St. Mary's.
The only one still there.
So were you, and you were living on campus at that time?
No, no. I was had a small apartment on 2nd Street in an alley.
And so from 2nd Street to St. Mary's, you got lost. That's funny.
That was at night, and of course it was dark, you know, and I had never driven down that way before, so.
And you got to realize, too.
But
that
I found it. I found it. You got there, and.
Yeah, the streets weren't.
Got in there, and the nun came in. What are you here for? Of course, you could see Shirley was pregnant.
Right. And then she shook you down for $40.
She said, sit down over there for a while. We sat down. And,
yeah, the nuns need their
money.
First
thing she said, where's the money?
Nothing in healthcare has changed, as you know.
No.
We still want the copay.
So I had to write a check for $40.
Wow. $40 back then was a ton of money.
That was delivery charge. That's right.
Wow. Well, Bob, we really, really, really appreciate you coming and spending some time
with us.
Thanks
a lot for having me.
Absolutely. You've led such a wonderful life. You've impacted so many people in town.
Well, I've had a lot of good experiences.
Well, I appreciate
working
that.
Working with people has been very, very gratifying for me. I appreciate that.
Well, that's
great. And thank you for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So we have a couple minutes. I still want to try and weasel a good story out of you about one of a prominent Tucsonan who you saw at the U of A. You know, help guide.
I don't think it's going to happen, Fred. I don't really think it's going to happen. Fred.
Yeah. All right. All right, so we do have some roses to give away. And these are courtesy of our friends, the Coleman family at Mayfield Florist. And I believe the question was, what hospital
did Bob
get lost?
Get lost with his wife, Shirley, as they're driving in a truck in the middle of the night for the first child. What hospital were they headed to deliver their first child that they got lost? And how long did it take you to get this this St. Mary's Hospital? I might as well get away.
Well,
how long did it take you to drive there?
I was a little apartment on 2nd Street. If you think in terms of the dormitories on the north side of the campus.
Right.
And it was an alley behind that one. And with a duplex. $25 a month in this winter or summer, and 20 or 15 in the summer. And my wife came down after I had made arrangements to get the thing. And when she walked in the door, she looked at it and she began to cry.
Oh, no.
Pretty raw stuff, you know.
Bob, thanks a bunch for coming on
but
the show.
She got over that, and she just took charge and took care of everything.
That behind every great man is an outstanding woman.
Oh, I tell you.
Well, thanks again. We really appreciate you coming on, and it's because of folks like you that make our community such a wonderful place to live.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Thank
Good
you.
Luck for you guys, too. Okay?
Thank you. We appreciate it. All right, folks, that's the show. Tune in next week for another Fred and Jeff show here on 104.1 The Truth with my little brother Fred and me. And have a great weekend out there. Be kind to everybody, and we'll see you next week.